Hello. Welcome to Comic Book Herald Live. Hey, everybody, I'm Dave Busing, founder and editor-in-chief of comicbookherald.com. At some point, I got to let editor-in-chief go. I'm really not editing anything these days. We stopped writing criticism more or less over the past year. Maybe just president of Comic Book Herald, tyrant, I suppose. What's Doom's title?
Emperor.
God Emperor. Yeah.
You could be the maker of Comic Book Herald.
The maker? Maybe. That's true. I guess I am Comic Book Herald's maker. As you may be able to hear live, for those of you who are with us live, you can definitely hear our special guest today. Joining us live from the future, it's Owen from Owen Likes Comics. How's it going, Owen?
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I have been spending the best part of the last 3 or 4 months trying to bully you into inviting me on this show. I pop into the chat at least once a week just to remind you I am here and I want to be a part of this show.
I love it.
And as soon as – because I kind of – your ultimate coverage over the last couple of months has been like some of my go-to stuff to like really immerse myself and figure out how I feel about a lot of these books. And as soon as we started talking about why don't we just do an episode together where we just deep dive into this stuff – I've been so excited because for those of you who may know me from over on my YouTube channel or from Twitter or from wherever, I know a thing or two about the ultimate Marvel comics. So
there we go.
It's fun to kind of share it with someone else who knows a lot of this stuff. So this should be a fun conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This one is going to be all Ultimate Universe all the time. For those of you who are with us here live, if you can let us know in the chat if you're having any issues with audio or video. As if you followed the CBH channel in the past, you may know that there is always at least one AI attack. Orcus always executes at least one AI attack. Usually we get Nimrod in our system at some point when I try to do a live stream. Owen, you'll be pleased to know that on the chat that I reuse for these live streams, the last message in there was Kieran Gillen has exited the chat. So you are officially Kieran's follow-up.
You know, I met Kieran Gillen like last year and he was absolutely wonderful. He's one of the nicest people in comics I've got to meet. So of all the people I could follow up, I'm very honored to be following up the great work of Kieran Gillen. I will also say in regards to Orcus, we've learned that Orcus always wins. So our efforts to fix any tech issues may be futile, but absolutely, we can try.
But we'll definitely try. We'll definitely try. So this is going to be like, we're going deep into the new Ultimate Universe. Okay. Get in your questions, get in your thoughts to those of you who are here live. We got some really good questions from the Twitter crowd earlier. We're definitely going to try to get to those. I think I've got a whole host of topics for us to cover today. Owen, first question to you though. We're just going to do it. We're just going to go right in. What should we call the new Ultimate Universe? Because I feel like it needs a name. It's a little confusing that there's like a 1.0 and a 2.0. Is it just Ultimate Universe 2? Like, what are you thinking of it as?
That's a good question. I've got a couple of suggestions. I like New Ultimates, but like New Metal. So like NU Ultimates.
Okay.
I think goes pretty hard.
Yeah.
I think Absolute Marvel, we could use that.
Yeah.
I think the Ultimates with a
Z. Now, are you getting ahead of DC on the Absolute Marvel there? Are you
we've got to beat them to the punch.
Just taking it out from
Snyder
under them.
Snyder's not going to know what's going to hit him when Johnny Hicks comes in with Absolute Marvel. I like Ultimates with a Z, though ironically that feels like a relic of the 2000s, which is kind of on brand, I suppose. I was thinking about this when the stuff got announced last year, and it's something that's kept kind of reverberating in my brain, which is that it's very funny that, you know, outside of like some visual similarities and some like basic ideas, this universe has nothing in common with the original Ultimate Universe. And in some ways, that's for the best. Some ways, that is a good thing to distance yourselves from that era of comics. But I know just from like interacting with my viewers on my channel, I cover a lot of the original Ultimate books. And I've had a lot of people expressing interest in these new series, but being confused, like, is this a continuation of the old Ultimate books? Is Ultimate Spider-Man, is that the same Peter Parker from the original Ultimate Spider-Man? I've had to explain that No, it just shares a name and basic concept. They're nothing alike. Mm. And this is something we'll get into, and this is something I've been thinking about, and maybe we'll cover on my channel at a later date, that in a lot of ways, the way in which this universe has been forged and kind of set up reminds me less of the original Ultimate Universe and more of Jim Shooter's new universe.
Mm.
In the way that, like, the Ultimate Universe just starts. You get Ultimate Spider-Man issue one. There's no, like, inciting incident. There's no setup. It's just, here you are. And then you meet other heroes along the way.
Yeah.
The new universe starts with, like, the White event. It starts with this inciting incident that creates the world of superheroes and this ticking clock of what the universe is going to be. Similarly to what happens in Ultimate Invasion and Ultimate Universe number one and the kind of ticking clock we've got currently of like the Maker's impending return, which we'll touch on later.
Yeah.
But then also the thing that a really interesting selling point for me with these new Ultimate books is that they're seemingly being published in real time. Each issue is seemingly set a month after each other. So in real time, we are building to, say, in 18 months, the Maker's return, which is another feature of Shooter's new universe, that all these books were coming out. And if there's a month between issues one and two, a month would pass in the stories. So maybe it should just be the new universe, the new universe. But I suppose Hickman and Marvel don't want to associate themselves with that.
I was going to say, I would bet dollars to donuts that if you put it to Hickman and said, would you rather relaunch the new universe or Ultimates? I bet he'd pick the new universe.
Look, I mean, like, Hickman's got precedent for taking Jim Shooter's ideas and making something better out of them.
White events.
I trust
sure.
him to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, nobody loved, like clocks in comics, you know, like actually adhering to time, like Jim Shooter. Like, that was a huge part of when he left Marvel. And Valiant, they had a chronology down to, like,
yeah.
the day and the hour, you know? Like absolutely obsessed with that stuff. And it falls apart after a certain amount of time. But, like, in a short rush for the continuity-obsessed, like, comics fan, it's kind of thrilling. Like, it's actually kind of fun.
I think it is fun. And something I really like about these new Ultimate books is, so kind of at the end of Ultimate Universe issue one, we have the whole thing where Tony gets framed for the terror attack and then they go into hiding. And then in Ultimate Spider-Man issue one, we basically get this 6 month ticking clock, essentially, where the Ultimates are in hiding. Peter gets given the orb. And in 6 months, Tony and the Ultimates are going to reappear and they're hoping that other heroes are going to be there with them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really, really fun pitch. And even though the individual books themselves aren't dealing with that in a massive way, like, that's not a big factor in Ultimate Black Panther, Ultimate X-Men, Ultimate Spider-Man, I feel like once those books kind of reach issue six and we reach the point in where the new Ultimates book's coming out and we reach that 6 month period, I'm really intrigued to see like how interconnected this universe is, because currently all of the three ongoings seem really disparate, really separate,
right?
And feel like, although there are kind of connective tissues, all feel like they're existing in their own world, which is something I really like, that each one feels very unique and the product of its creative team.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious to just see kind of as this universe builds and we get more characters and more books and we get to see more of like the big picture stuff, how they manage to juggle like that whole idea of each book feeling independent while also serving a larger narrative.
Yeah. So let's focus there on the premise, right? On the setup of all this. We're going to start from the beginning. We're going to work our way through each of these titles that has come out. We're also going to dig into the upcoming Ultimates being written by Dennis Camp. And then maybe some theories, right? About like, we kind of, the one of the most interesting things you mentioned it there, Owen, is there's an 18 month clock, right? We actually have a clock on this, for the Maker's impending return. And whether that means the end of this universe, whether that means a big event and then they continue behind the scenes, is a lot of that's going to have to do with how's it doing, right? But we can also just sort of theorize, like, narratively, what do we think that suggests? But let's start with the premise, which is, you know, starting an Ultimate Invasion, you have Jonathan Hickman and Brian Hitch, and then you have the one-shot Ultimate Universe, which came out right after. So essentially you have five issues from them setting up this universe. And the premise is the Maker, the one and only, who, like, sort of transcends, like, time and universes at this point. I don't want to get too deep into the complications.
It's a whole
of that.
Thing. It I'm just
really
choosing
is.
To not.
Yeah. Get into. But he's, you know, essentially he is the tie. He's the tether to the original Ultimate Universe, because the Maker is an original Ultimate Universe idea, sort of kickstarted by Brian Michael Bendis and then really taken and ran with by Hickman in his Ultimates run, which is in and of itself pretty deep into the original Ultimate Universe.
Oh yeah,
experience, right? Like, we're 10 years in at that point. But the Maker here is trying to build and establish his own universe that he's totally in control of. There was some theorizing as to when Donny Cates was kind of teasing the role of the Maker and the build towards an Ultimate Universe in the pages of Venom, which was actually pretty good stuff, I thought. Not just Venom, but like the specific uses of the Maker. There was some theorizing there that, like, oh, the Maker is going to try to resurrect the Earth 1610, which is the OG Ultimate Universe, which seemed to just be like in flames, right? It had been destroyed in Secret Wars. That's why there were no more Ultimate Universe comics.
Well, it's weird because, like, I said this at the time when Invasion was coming out, and I think it bears repeating that obviously this project was initially kind of created by Cates, and then after his accident, Hickman was brought on in to shepherd it. I think that, like, outside of the idea of a new Ultimate imprint and the Maker being the catalyst and our kind of lead character into it, I don't think there would be a lot of overlapping between what Cates was going to do and what Hickman's doing here. I think that Hickman, whether intentionally or not, kind of rebuilt this project from the ground up. I'm not saying that's a positive or a negative. I think that what Cates was setting up seemed really interesting, which obviously, like, in that Venom run, you have the scene where the Maker returns to Earth 1610, he's in Times Square, and the world is on fire. And if I remember correctly, it's been a while since I've read that run, but there's like billboards basically saying, like, where are the Ultimates? Where have our heroes gone? So there was like an intriguing mystery of, like, what's happened to this place? Because you're, like you said, it's destroyed at the end of Time Runs Out and in Secret Wars. And then it's, I believe, Reed rebuilt it, because then it shows up in Bendis' Spider-Man 2, where they go there and you see like the new Ultimates with Peter and Riri Williams is on the team. So there's clearly that something's happened between the end of that series and what Cates was doing in Venom. And for better or for worse, Hickman just decides he is not interested in telling that story and instead does a completely different story.
Yeah.
Which I really like the story Hickman says, but there's clearly been an editorial jump between one plot and the next. So I would be interested in a later date, maybe finding out, okay, how different did this turn out? Because I think that something that we'll get into when we talk about the individual books, specifically Invasion and Ultimate Spider-Man, is that this series is maybe one of the most Jonathan Hickman runs I've ever read, in that it's so much, both in terms of just his style and his themes and the things he's interested in exploring as a writer, and also just like how much of himself and his own personal experiences he injects into this series, specifically into his depiction of like Peter and MJ.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, in the hands of anyone else, this would have been a very, very different run.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can really look at what we have without considering the role that Hickman's played in crafting it.
Totally. And it's important background and context, because it is like, this was probably going to be a Cates vision, right? In a narrative that was building in the pages of Venom. They had a terrible accident, and I wish them very well. And Donnie seems to be recovering. Seems to be a little more present, a little more active in the comic space. Hopefully the recovery is going nicely, right? But then this becomes a Hickman vision. And the one thing he does very decidedly is to say, the Maker is our tether to the past, but we are not going to be rooted in that, right? This is going to be like basically a fresh new universe, as you call it, right? Where we take the Maker's vision for controlling and kind of owning a Marvel universe that he likes is to basically take a lot of the origin stories out of it, right? So we have a Marvel universe with the known players. We have a Peter Parker. We have our Tony Starks. But their origin stories are all very different. The Spider was stopped from biting Peter, right? The Fantastic Four never get off the ground. Of course, they're given extra attention by the Maker, who is, right, the evil, twisted original Ultimate Universe version of Reed Richards. So we don't have, you know, it in a sense, it's a world without superheroes, except it's not totally that, because you still have Tony Stark's dad, Howard Stark, piloting an Iron Man suit. You still have the Maker's Council, which is this basically Illuminati, right? Shadowy cabal controlling the world, right? From the background, but it includes the Hulk, Magic, Colossus, the Moon Knights, right? A lot of familiar Marvel Comics elements, but as these, you know, again, the sinister cabal that is like controlling the world. And that is the part of the premise that I'm definitely the most into, big picture, but has also been touched on the least as the actual series have launched, right? The actual books that have come out, we got Ultimate Spider-Man, Ultimate Black Panther, and Ultimate X-Men, are very, very slightly connected to these council ideas and sort of the shadowy elite and the return of the Maker. And they're taking their time kind of getting back to that big story. Now that I can see the vision, I appreciate it. I wasn't like fully on board with Ultimate Invasion. I think as a comics work, it didn't work for me as like a big event necessarily. I didn't feel like Hitch to me felt like too much of a callback, frankly, as the main interior artist, because Hitch is so, you know, decidedly identified
so synonymous
with the Ultimates,
with the original Ultimate Universe.
Yeah. And deservedly so, like made that thing so big, right? Like when people talk about that and they're talking about Mark Miller and they're not talking about Hitch, they are missing the point of why Ultimates was such a big deal. But anyway, the point being, that's the premise. We have an 18-month clock. So the way that ends, the way Ultimate Invasion ends, is the Maker is trapped inside this dome. I believe battling Kang? Is that right?
Yes. So at the end of Invasion Issue 4, you have Kang is... So earlier in the series, Kang is sending clones of the Ultimates back in time to try and assassinate the Maker. And the Maker is trying to rebuild this Immortus engine, which is the time machine he used to remake this reality in his image. And then in issue 4, you get the big battle between Kang and the Maker. And then Howard, who is Iron Man, gets caught in it. And then there's the Reed Richards, Doctor Doom. And then at the end of it, yeah, Kang, Maker, and I think Howard get trapped in the dome. I feel like Howard survives and is in the dome. I might be mistaken.
So possibly you've got inside this dome, which is sealed for 18 months. You've got the Maker, who was controlling everything. You've got maybe Tony's dad. We have like a younger Tony here kind of leading the Ultimates. We'll talk about that.
We got kind of like teen Tony going on.
Yeah, a little bit. And then this Kang version, who this Kang is Tony?
It's not explicitly said that it's Tony, but
okay.
It's Tony.
But it's Tony.
Because there's the moment at the end of Invasion Issue 4 where he takes Kang's mask off and we don't see it, but we see he like sheds a tear. And then obviously when we see the Iron Lad armor, it's very similar to what Kang was wearing,
so,
just in a different color scheme.
So a possible 11th hour twist there where it's like, oh, it's Aunt May. but probably it's Tony. Okay, so they're all in the dome. They're, whatever's happening there, who knows, right? But what we've got is basically we have an 18-month window here where the Ultimates, who kind of know about this, have a chance to try to reshape the world and to try to instill, basically to fight against the Maker's predeterminism, to give sort of free will back to the people. Yeah. And then you have this council that is saying, no, we control everything. If there's a war happening, that is essentially just a game we're playing to implement control on the people. That alone is such a Hickman idea. Like, that is so present in East of West. It is so present in Black Monday Murders. The idea that, not necessarily that there are like 10 people who rule the world, but there are these systems in place that kind of control and manipulate everything, and that the average commoner is just sort of held at their whim. That theme, that idea is, and in Black Monday Murders, it's very explicitly like the magic that they control is money, is wealth, is power, right? Like those themes are so present, and he's bringing it here in kind of the most Marvel Comics way you can, which is to say like, and one of them is the Hulk, right? That part of it I love. I really enjoy that idea. But that's the backdrop of everything, which I don't know that you would know that or even need to know that if you're just reading Ultimate Spider-Man, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. So just to kind of, for everyone watching, just because I know quite a few people didn't read Invasion, they just jumped into like Ultimate Spider-Man. So at the end of Ultimate Invasion 4, like you said, Dave, that the Maker, Kang, and Howard Stark all end up in this dome, and they're sealed in there for 2 years. That Reed Richards and Tony Stark, basically, they discover that the way the world is isn't how it's supposed to be, and that the Maker has kind of changed things to mold it in his image. So they kind of orchestrate this scheme to trap the Maker and everyone else in this dome. And so the Maker's sealed in there for 2 years, and Tony and Reed now have a chance to put the world back to how it should be, effectively, without using time travel. Well, we'll get to that. But at the time, it's like, we can't go back 20 years and make Peter Spider-Man as a teenager. We have to now try and do it now.
Yeah.
So we have to, like, and effectively, and I think this is where we're going to go in forthcoming series, is the idea is Tony and the Ultimates have to build essentially a Marvel universe to fight alongside them against whatever comes out of that dome in 18 months' time. Which, as we said, they seem to be approaching that in both in-universe time and in real-world time as well. Because now we're 4 months into Ultimate Spider-Man, and I think the newest issue was set in April, so we are 4 months in-universe as well.
Yeah.
And then when the Ultimates comes out, that will be 6 months in, when we re-see Tony again. And then, so I'm assuming in 18 months' time, that's when we'll get whatever Hickman's big event for this universe is, whether it's Ultimatum 2 or whether it's something else.
It's the betting favorite, for sure. Right.
Yeah, I would imagine that Hickman fancies himself as a writer well enough that he's like, I can do Ultimatum and make it really good.
Yeah, yeah. Because he redid Secret Wars, right? Doesn't shy away from the branding of it all. Although Ultimatum certainly has a
different and he's kind of redoing the new universe here.
Yeah.
So I think, like, he's like, yeah, I can take Ultimatum and make it work.
Yeah.
And I believe him. So I think the setup of this universe is really interesting. And like I said, I'm just really intrigued to see where it goes from here, in a way where, like, the ongoings are dealing with, like, in a way, fairly small stories, but also doing a lot of world building in their own regard, while also not massively dealing with the whole aspects of, like, the Maker may be gone, but his followers and his Illuminati and his cabal are still present in a lot of these books.
Yeah.
We see Captain Britain in Ultimate Spider-Man. We see the Moon Knights in Ultimate X-Men. In Ultimate Black Panther. And then there's references to, like, Sunfire in Ultimate X-Men as well. So it's clearly, like, that's still a big issue that they're spinning, but I don't think we'll see a great deal of that until the return of Tony and the Ultimates in June, when that series starts.
Yeah, no, it's coming for sure. Quick note here, we got a super chat in from Ricky Bobby. Love your work, Ricky. It says, loving this new Ultimate Universe. Also, I use CBH Reading Orders every week. You help me get into comics, and now I can't stop. I get that a lot. I get that a lot, both positive and negative. People are like, why did you do this to me? I can't stop reading comics. Nonetheless, thank you so much for your support and jumping in here in the live chat. I really appreciate having you here and having you share this love of comics with us. Owen, we're going to get into each of these books. I do first. So we know we have, like, this running clock, right? Which I kind of like as a premise. And I think Dennis Camp has been saying that Ultimates is, I think, a planned 18 issues. Maybe 12 to 18, but he's been kind of saying, like, basically, like, it's going to be one issue. Each one is, like, one and done, and we're meeting, like, a new Marvel character kind of, you know, per issue kind of deal. But the point of that I'm getting to is, like, oh, and then the Maker's back, and then we kind of, you know, now we have to deal with this actual, like, try to control this universe type thing. Here's my theory. I float a theory by you. I explicitly did not share this on social, because I was like, this is too inflammatory. I wonder if Hickman put in the 2-year ultimatum timeline in the new Ultimate Universe specifically in response to the Krakoan exodus. And I kind of wonder if mentally he was like, well, Marvel kind of couldn't handle that 5-year timeline. Like, they kind of couldn't fully get on board with just, like, my desire to have, like, you know, a fairly rigid structure of, like, publication scheduling time. So fine, this one ends in 2 years, no take backs. There's no getting out of it. And also, just like, a busy individual, right, can write pretty much any comic he wants at this point. I actually think it's kind of brilliant to be like, yeah, I'll ride this out for 2 years, right? We've got a 2-year clock on this. That's my working theory, that this is like, like kind of a backhanded like response to what happened with X-Men.
That's an interesting idea. I think that like
there's no evidence.
Knowing that let's be knowing clear. Kind of that how kind of his X-Men run was went in a different direction to how he intended and ultimately led to him walking away. There is probably an aspect of this where he's kind of like, right, I've kind of built this failsafe in where if either Marvel are getting cold feet or if I don't want to do this series anymore, there's an easy way of an out here of yeah. either where we can stop the books altogether or I can leave after this point and someone else can take over in more of a kind of clean break than what happened in Inferno. That makes
yeah.
sense.
Yeah. Hey, here's a question for you. How long do you want a new Ultimate Universe to run? Because I've been pitching for a long time that I really like the idea of every decade there should be a new Ultimate Universe. Maybe it runs 5 years, maybe it runs 7 years, but essentially like every decade there should be a refresh and you should give the creators of the moment, kind of the creators of the yeah. now. What do you think?
I think that makes sense because like the original universe, which is like orchestrated by the likes of Bendis, Miller, Hitch, Bagley. They're like the definitive creators of the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Especially at Marvel. Like Bendis and Miller are like the two guys that are writing all the big Marvel events of that decade. And so it makes sense. Like Jonathan Hickman has been the guy at Marvel for the last 10 years. So it makes sense that he is the kind of the maker and the overseer of this universe.
Yeah.
I do like that idea of the Ultimate Universe kind of being this modern day take on Marvel that refreshes itself. Like the original Ultimate Universe is Marvel of the 2000s in both positive and negative. It is such a product of its time, and that's what makes it so interesting to me. And kind of doing a similar thing here where this is an Ultimate Marvel specifically designed for the 2020s and the current state of not only the world but comics as well.
Yeah.
So I do think that is an interesting idea. In regards to how long I want this run and this universe to last, I think it's too early to say just because we don't know what's going to happen in 18 months' time.
Yeah.
When whatever happens with the Maker, like it wouldn't shock me if, let's say, and I'm speculating here, that after Cates couldn't do the series because of his accident, either Hickman was approached by Marvel and said, we need you to do this, or he, you know, requested he wanted to do it. If he said, I will do this for 2 years, I will come up with a roadmap for this long, I will set it up, and then I will hand it to you. Mm-hmm. And then after that 2 years, do what you want with it.
Yeah.
That wouldn't shock me if that, like, in 18 months' time, Hickman leaves Ultimate Spider-Man and someone else takes over, and that his role is to essentially get this new universe off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't shock me. But if he wants to keep writing it after that period, I think right now all three ongoing books are really, really excellent. The three are the best things Marvel are producing. I'm really excited for Dennis Camp's Ultimate series that's coming out in June. So at the moment, I've got no reason to say let's kind of slow down or stop anytime soon because I think these are all incredible books. And even though we'll have four titles, there's so many characters and so many aspects of this universe that we've barely scratched the surface of yet. So there's still a lot to do.
It'll be, we're definitely in that early honeymoon phase, I think, with these books, right? Like we're still in the launch, we're still in the build. Everything feels pretty important and relatively enjoyable. It'll be very interesting to see, you know, 2 years down the line, what the fandom tenor is around like, yeah, let's do this big event and end it and just have it be a great 2 years. Or is there going to be the more likely, like if it's going well, right? And we get to this point, everybody's going to want more. That's just how this goes, you know, right? And the number one question that I got from folks, you know, writing in today was like, what series do you think they should announce next, right? So I think there's an expectation and kind of a, just the way that like, you know, big two tend to operate, which is like, well, no, this is just going to get bigger and they're going to add more and more. And there's definitely a part of me that prefers, like, I love that this is only three books about to be four. I love that this has like a shot clock and is going to end. Or at least have a semblance of an ending. I don't know. That part to me is extremely appealing to have some, because one of the biggest problems that 616 has is it's way too spread out. And I think there's a real sense that quality control is like not right. That like it's, you know, that there are 75 books every week and that maybe one of them is great and a handful are good. And I think with the Ultimate Universe, you have this chance to at least sort of identify as like, yeah, this is a more prestigious thing. This has more high quality. You know, DC Black Label's been thrown around. It's not that, but I like the idea of it approaching that. What do you think?
That idea of prestige was something I was going to say, is that I think in a lot of instances, less is more. And a lot of my issues with a lot of big Marvel stuff at the moment is just there's too much and it's spread too thin. Like, I was really excited for Fall of X. You know, I've been someone that's been a really big fan of the Krakoa era. Even if the post-Hickman stuff didn't wow me in the same way as the Hickman stuff, sure, I was still looking forward to seeing how they wrap up what I think has been the most exciting era of the X-Men in at least 10 years. And yet I'm struggling to keep up with everything. And I think the quality of all of the titles really varies. And I'm really not having an easy time following everything that's going on and having a lot of enthusiasm for it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that what's happening here, where you've got, we had a mini series, then we had three ongoings, which will become four. And at least with the three we've got so far, they're all of excellent quality, at least in my opinion. I think all three books are fantastic. Some of them are kind of slow in taking their time in building up the characters in the world, but that's okay. We're halfway through a volume one. I expect it to be a lot of setup and world building.
Yeah.
And I think this idea of like, oh, now we need an ultimate Fantastic Four, and we need an ultimate Guardians of the Galaxy, and we need an ultimate, you know, whatever. If you suddenly launch 10 more titles, not only are you kind of stretching the editor's ability and Hickman's ability to kind of make sure everything connected and part of this precise plan, but I think you're also losing some of the novelty of it, where, like you said, there is an aspect of less is more here, where it's like the quality control is greater because there's three to four books. And I think maybe you could get to a point where there could be five or six. But anything more than that, I think, feels excessive. And I think that something the original Ultimate Universe struggled with was that it stopped feeling special because there's just so much of it. In between all the ongoings, they always had an event or a mini-series going on. Where I think if you keep it to just 4 to 6 titles, and maybe you can do a couple of mini-series as well. Maybe it can be like, okay, we're going to do an Ultimate Wolverine. Here's 6 issues, and then that's it. And maybe then he'll pop up as a side character in X-Men or whatever. Mm. I'd be cool with that. But I think in terms of the ongoing stuff, I don't want them to expand too much too quickly, because then I think it loses the prestige of the fact that there are only these books and they're all of such high quality. And I also think it loses just some of the specialness about them as well.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I think the smaller you can keep the line, the better position it's going to be. You do also hear, like, one of the things that goes under the radar with the new Ultimate Universe is you have Will Moss editing the line. And Will Moss is, I think, pretty unquestionably my favorite Marvel editor of the last, I mean, certainly decade. An individual tied to, like, Immortal Hulk, for example. Jason Aaron Thor run. Like, generally, if you kind of go up and down the line of, like, oh, what were some of the most interesting books of the last decade, you're often going to find Will Moss attached. An individual who seems to have a good ability to, like, let creators be themselves, but also to identify, you know, really talented creators who might not have got, like a Peach Momoko on Ultimate X-Men, for example, right? Somebody who the average fan would not have cast in that way, right? Like, that was a genuine surprise, I think, to a lot of us. It seems to have really interesting good taste. I'm a huge fan of Moss. I think, like, they're greatly suited to help lead this initiative. You know, obviously Hickman gets a lot of the credit, and deservedly so, for the plotting and the narrative of it all. But you do need somebody like that. I don't think that an individual like that can manage 10 books at that level. I just think that's, like, an unreasonable assignment to give someone.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
okay.
No, of course.
I think one of the most fascinating things about the Ultimate Universe relaunch is how decidedly different each title is approaching the assignment. Like, all three books that have come out seem to have gotten, like, it's like they all got the same blurb, right? And same premise. And they're all attacking it in different ways to a degree. Which one to you stands out the most? And, like, what do you like about how they're going about it?
So I'm enjoying all three books at the moment, to different degrees and extents, but I'm picking up each one. I'm enjoying it. I've got nothing but praise for all three series.
Same.
But it is interesting that they're going about them all in very different ways. The one that's the most, like, starkly and noticeably different by far is Peach Momoko's X-Men, which is, you know, we're only 2 issues in, so we've got the least of that series than the others, so it's kind of hard to judge. But if X-Men wasn't in the name of this book, I would not expect the X-Men to ever be in this book, because
yeah.
it is,
yeah,
outside of the fact that the protagonist is a kind of obscure X-Men character, there is no crossover with Charles Xavier and the Mansion and Magneto and, you know, all that stuff. It is taking the premise and the basic idea of X-Men, specifically the relationship between kind of like mutant coming of age and adolescence and trauma, and recontextualizing it in a completely different way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's really interesting and it's really cool that we're having an X-Men book, which is unlike not only any X-Men comic I've ever read, but unlike any mainstream Marvel book I've really read, outside of, ironically, things like Demon Days, which Momoko also did.
Yeah. Yeah. It is, without question, the most controversial of the bunch.
I knew, like, when Peach was brought onto the series and when we kind of got an idea of what her take on X-Men was going to be,
yeah,
I knew it was going to be polarizing, because it's not the X-Men, at least not yet. It could evolve and morph into something more familiar. But as of right now, it's kind of X-Men in name only. And that's something I think is cool. Like, how do you take this idea and this concept that we've got two issues in, where all we know is Armor and Maystorm, and how do you turn that into an X-Men? That's something I'm really intrigued to see.
Yeah, I'm a pretty big fan. I like Peach Momoko's style a lot, but frankly, the thing that I love the most about her Ultimate X-Men is just that she gives no F's about fan service.
And this is something I'll say for all three books, but especially with what Momoko's doing, this is unapologetically a auteur's vision of what Peach Momoko wants to do.
Yes.
This is not a book that is like editorially mandated or is ghostwritten or has any real kind of constraints or oversight. They have clearly said to Peach Momoko, here is X-Men, reinvent it in your image, however mm-hmm. you will. And I find it really fascinating to see the direction they're going in. And I think that as we start to like not only find out more about what her take on X-Men is, but how it connects to the larger Ultimate Universe, I'm so excited to see where this book goes. Out of the three of them, I think this is the one where I have the least expectations and the least ideas of, okay, I think this is the direction. Not to say that the other two books play it safe, but anything could happen in this series. And
I think it's fair to say they're a lot safer. In many ways, I think Momoko's X-Men is the Ultimate Universe that, like, in a vacuum, I think I want. You know, like, it does have mm-hmm. that DC Black Label feel of, like you said, auteur vision, creators just doing what they want, you know, in a sort of prestigious way. Again, this is not the approach anyone else is taking, right? So, like,
no, and I think that's wild. Maybe this is just an odd comparison. It might just be because I've been rereading this other series quite recently.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of like how it just and I think these two books vary in quality quite a lot, so it might be an odd comparison. But it reminds me a lot of what Jeff Lemire did when he did Teen Titans Earth One, which like is nothing like the Teen Titans at all in both volumes of that book.
Yeah.
It's so outside of like these are the characters who you would associate with the Teen Titans, they have very little in common with the like main universe counterparts. And it is just taking the core essential elements in this new continuity and doing something new with them. Now, while I don't think that series is anywhere near as good as what Momoko is doing necessarily, I think it's a comparable kind of discussion in how they are just taking the core aspects of an iconography and of a character and an IP and doing something completely unique with them. Whereas I think what Hickman and Tichetto is doing with Ultimate Spider-Man is quite a grand reinvention of the character, but in more of a subtle and understated way. And with Black Panther, I like Ultimate Black Panther a lot. I think that each issue I read, it's starting to grow on me more and more. But it feels to me like it's got a bit of like movie pitch comics vibe about it.
Yes.
In a way.
Black Panther is the most movie-fied of the bunch. And yeah, I say that as someone who's generally enjoying it.
It's got like a J. Michael Straczynski Superman Earth One vibe about it, where it's like, this was the Man of Steel script that didn't get picked up. And it's and I think part of that is like, it clearly is drawing inspiration from the MCU's depiction of T'Challa and Wakanda, which makes sense. But I think so far that's probably the series that's played it the most safe. And yet there's still like some really, really radical reinventions in that series. Like, I'm really intrigued to see, learn more about its depiction of Killmonger and Storm. I think what it's doing with characters like Shuri and Okoye is really interesting. Obviously, the whole aspect of the Moon Knights of Khonshu and Ra, and especially with like the reveal we got in the last issue of like whatever they've discovered in like that tomb could lead to something really, really interesting. So I'm not going to kind of write that series off yet, but so far, I think Ultimate X-Men is the one that's doing the most like noticeably different stuff.
It's definitely the most different. Purely on the grounds of like, who is your focus, right? This is the book called X-Men. And Momoko's like, oh, cool. Like, how about armor? And eventually we'll get to Surge, right? Like, those are your leads. Maybe we've got like kind of a Shadow King analog, but probably not even. Like, probably it's more just going to be something kind of new based on like the folklore that the Momoko is interested in exploring. But just like visually, it's fantastic, right? We're only two issues in. I'm curious if after six issues, can Momoko land a plane, essentially, right? Can she bring this to, here's where mutants are in this Ultimate Universe? Like, that, those are questions I kind of do want answers to, you know what I mean? You know, we do have mutant characters, typically mutants, you know, on the council. We have Colossus, we have Ileana Rasputin, we have Sunfire, we have, maybe that's it, right? But we got Captain Britain and connections there. Like, I would love to better understand that standard Marvel continuity stuff, right? That lore stuff, while at the same time enjoying what it is that Momoko's doing. I mean, it is. It's an incredibly ambitious swing, but I my worry with the book, I kind of want to do like, what do you love and what's your worry with each of these? My worry with X-Men is we get like seven issues in and everybody's just looking at this like, where are the claws? You know what I mean? Like, everybody's looking at this like, where like, are the X-Men?
To like do my one like obligatory Simpsons joke on any show I go on, there's an aspect of like, when are we going to get to the fireworks factory?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, I'm enjoying the slow world building that we're getting in Ultimate X-Men. And again, we've only had two issues of this series. We've read the least of it so far. So I think that should be kind of important context. But I'm enjoying the slow burn and methodical journey that Momoko is taking us on. But I don't know how, like, compared to like, well, I don't want to say that Ultimate Spider-Man is just fan service, because I think Hickman and Cecchetto are doing something genuinely really interesting and nuanced with the Spider-Man mythos. Given kind of what's going on in other Spider-Man books at the moment, there is an aspect of kind of wish fulfillment and fan service with this series of giving people a premise and a basic concept that they've been asking for. And Ultimate X-Men is doing the complete opposite. It is not the X-Men in any kind of discernible way. So I'm curious to see how long it takes for readers to kind of maybe kind of get impatient with it. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I would say the same. I mean, any fan of you know, big two comics, right? Especially of the Marvel Universe, who's been sitting there saying, I want something new, right? I want something unfamiliar. I don't want the same things recycled. You have to pick up Ultimate X-Men and appreciate the ambition. Like, even if you're like, even if you're not enjoying this particular story, like, you have to appreciate the swing. Because again, it is actually different. And it is actually taking an approach that is unexpected.
Like, irrespective of what direction this series ultimately goes in, you have to really commend both Peach and Marvel's kind of ability to let her take such a recognizable and big IP and kind of twist and contort it in such an interesting way, which, given how protective they are of these big characters otherwise, is really fascinating that they're letting her do this to this extent.
Right. No, it is. It's a genuine surprise. And so you mentioned fan service with Spidey, and I think it's definitely the easiest valid criticism of Ultimate Spider-Man. I've seen a handful of individuals who are not enjoying it. I am, frankly, enjoying it quite a bit. But just as that sense of like, oh, it's just like everyone, right? But there's contingencies of Spider-Man fandom who are really tired of Amazing Spider-Man. That book has felt like it has been stuck in the mud forever. A huge problem since 2007's One More Day is a lot of fans were like, we liked Peter and MJ married. Like, we enjoyed that experience. Marvel has steadfastly resisted it in the proper continuity. And then you have Hickman's and Cecchetto sweep in and say, oh, sure, Peter's married to MJ. They have kids. Here's the family Spider-Man book you wanted. Now, I think calling it fan service sounds derogatory. You know, it sounds pejorative. It's not that simple. It's there was a book called Amazing Spider-Man, Renew Your Vows. That was just, hey, what if they were married? What if we gave you that dopamine hit every month, right? This is that, but it's also like you're in the hands of two creators who are just so good that at a minimum, like, it's going to be the best version of that, which is kind of worth seeing what that looks like, you know? So I don't really buy the idea that, like, it's a bad version of fan service, I would say. You know, fan service is not always a bad thing. I enjoyed Spider-Man No Way Home a lot. Shoving Toby and Andrew into that, fan service, right? So there are times when that works for me, I think. This is an instance that generally has been working. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's definitely an aspect where there is an audience for either just a different Spider-Man to what Marvel are putting out in books like Amazing, or just there is a sizable group of fans that have pretty much disliked most modern Spider-Man books post One More Day. And I think that both camps are clearly looking for something different and are, in many cases, looking for a married Spider-Man book. But I don't think that's the sole selling point and intrigue in this series. I think that what Hickman and Giacchetto and David Messina, who drew issue 4, are doing is actually really subtle and nuanced and interesting, and is such a big subversion of everything we know about Spider-Man. Maybe it's not doing it in such like an instantly recognizable way as what Momoko's doing on X-Men, but like almost everything we know about Spider-Man in this series has been flipped on its head. This is not a kind of like coming of age story about a teenage superhero finding his way in the world. This is a story about a middle-aged man having a crisis of confidence, about someone in their kind of mid to late 30s struggling with their identity and their place in the world, suddenly getting a new lease on life in a way that he never previously expected. And especially like when you know Jonathan Hickman's personal and professional background, and not to kind of speak out of turn, but I think there's a lot of this series which is quite autobiographical for his own experiences, going from working in PR and marketing to, at the age of, I think he was around 35,
yeah,
deciding he was going to become a writer and a novelist and doing things like the Black Monday murders and the Nightly News, and which is also an interesting intrigue given what two characters in this book are spending a lot of their time doing and the conversations they're having.
Yeah, right.
So I think this is a very auto-driven series. This is a book that, although other people have done married Spider-Man comics, this is a book that could only come out of the brain of Jonathan Hickman and out of the pencils of Marco Tichetto. I think that the fact that in issue 1, we got such a kind of like flip reverse of Spider-Man status quo, even down to the whole thing where like the thing about Spider-Man in the original sense, and even in the original Ultimate sense, is that he is a kid who has this responsibility thrust upon him.
Mm-hmm.
That does not happen to this Peter. Peter chooses the power and then is kind of grappling with the responsibility, but in a different sense, where it's like it's not his responsibility as a hero, it's his responsibility as a husband and a father. The fact that we are 4 issues in and he is still keeping secrets to the majority of his family. So it's kind of taking everything we know about Spider-Man, but in a very different way.
Yeah.
To the point where like he doesn't make his own costume, he doesn't choose his own kind of persona, really. It's kind of all given to him in a neat package, and he has to kind of learn to accept and come to terms with it. So I think that it is doing really interesting stuff. And like the further we get in, like the fact that we're 4 issues in and Uncle Ben is alive and potentially like I'm waiting for him and J. Jonah Jameson to kiss, which is a sentence I never thought I'd say in my life. But
yeah.
Here we are. The tension is palpable. That issue where they're just kind of sat in the sauna, like I had to go cool off after reading that. That was incredible stuff.
Yeah, yeah. The Jonah and Ben friendship that, like, in this, or maybe more, right, is definitely, it feels that way. It's so enjoyable. It's so,
honestly, it's the highlight.
That alone is like such a small twist, right? Like yeah. Ben being alive, okay, big twist from the Spider-Man mythos. J. Jonah being like best pals, maybe more,
yeah,
and like friendly towards Peter. It's like those little tweaks, it just adds like a degree of comedy. It adds a degree of like emotional resonance. I don't think like plot wise it's like transformative stuff, right? Kind of like you said,
no,
right? Like they've been married before in Miracle Man, right, by Alan Moore. That's certainly the template for like somebody gets superpowers later in life and what do they do with it? All these things have been out there. What really makes it work, and you saw this a lot in issue 4, which is the issue that came out this week, there's just like such honesty, there's such like emotional resonance that I find in exactly what you said, Owen, of like this is someone in their mid-30s. They already Peter already has responsibility. He has a family. He has kids, mm-hmm. right? That stuff's already – he has a job, right? He already has the responsibility in a way that 14, 15-year-old Peter didn't have. Now he's given this power, and he has to kind of choose, like, well, what the heck do I do with it, you know? And would you even want that at that point? The metaphor of, you know, Hickman's own autobiography, which you mentioned in there, is, like, kind of impossible not to see. If it's a creator you followed, you know, somebody who at that age decided, like, no, I'm going to make a full go of it with comics, you know? That sort of thing definitely feels relevant. So, like, whatever your path is, I think at that's like, I listen, I'm an individual in my mid-30s with young kids. Like, this is the book that is doing my life, but with spider powers. You know what I mean? Like, there's an emotional resonance to this. And again, it's one that you wouldn't find in the pages of Amazing at any point in the recent past.
Well, yeah. And I think as well, like I said, if you were to explain the plot of each issue, I don't think it would sound like it's doing anything wholly transformative.
Yeah.
But like, the small moments and like the little things we're getting in each issue is really changing who Spider-Man is and what he symbolizes in quite a big way. Even down to things like the reason why he has the costume he has, being that it was kind of almost like picked by his daughter because like the black suit is too scary. Like,
yeah,
even that's right. Like a really big tweak. And then like, obviously in issue 3, we kind of really got to meet Harry and we got to kind of see the blossoming of like this partnership and relationship between him and Peter, which again is nothing like any continuity we've seen them in previously, where they have no pre-established friendship, but they kind of have this shared trauma bond where they both lost relatives during the attack that Tony Stark was framed for, and now they both ended up becoming vigilantes as a result of it. So they're kind of like bound by this same kind of shared trauma and responsibility.
Well, I think that's a key point, because I think Hickman and Chiquetto have a very good sense, and the editorial team have a very good sense of like, what are fans going to be guessing at, right? Mm-hmm. And you have a Green Goblin costume, and all the fandom starts thinking, oh, it's Harry, right? And then, but what they have a good sense of is to say, yeah, it is. Of course it is. But that's not what makes this interesting, yeah. Right? It's not really who. It's like what happens when they figure that out together, and then that's how they become friends, or that's how they establish a relationship, you know? Mm-hmm. That to me is where it's like, oh, this is, I can watch them just have dinner. And I can watch the reveal that, oh, Harry's married to this universe's Gwen Stacy, and we've never seen her. You know what I mean? And like that mm-hmm. has obviously just the baggage and the weight of Spider-Man fandom, but it also like that's a much more interesting thing to me than just like the mask came off the goblin and, oh, guess what? It was Harry. Like that wasn't interesting in and of itself.
Like it being Harry itself isn't a twist. The twist is that this version of Harry is a completely different character, who seemingly, as far as we know, is a hero in this universe and is going to kind of be a partner to Spider-Man. Now, it wouldn't shock me if things down the line happen and they ended up, you know, falling apart and he becomes a bad guy. But for right now, Harry is almost kind of like someone Peter's looking up to. You know, I don't think it's any coincidence that the kind of big thing we get at the end of issue 4 is that Harry is the character that says the line to Peter.
Yeah.
Which is such an interesting person to say that to him, and the fact that it's used in a completely different context. That line always refers to Spider-Man, in that this is Peter's duty and his kind of moral compass as Spider-Man, that because he has these great powers as a hero, he has a responsibility to use them and be a protector of New York. Harry uses it in regards to Peter not revealing his secret identity to MJ. The fact that he is saying that, look, I'm the Green Goblin, I'm a vigilante, I'm going out every day and putting my life on the line. My wife, Gwen, deserves to know that and to be able to trust me and know that if something happens, that's why. Like, I have this power as a hero, but I also have this responsibility to my family. And so it's kind of, and especially for Peter as well, who not only has a lot less of the same protections that Harry has as someone who is wealthy, someone who has like this very sleek armor and all these gadgets, Peter is a fairly kind of middle-class guy with a wife and 2 kids and, you know, essentially, you know, an uncle and whatever J. Jonah Jameson is, he's part of the family now, apparently. Like he has these people that defend on him. Yeah. Oh, the bit in that issue where May is just glaring at JJ is like the spin-off book I didn't know I needed. Of just May Parker and J. Jonah Jameson going on adventures.
Yeah. No, that's good
stuff.
But
every issue of this book so far is subverting and doing something interesting with the idea of Spider-Man and our preconceived notions of Spider-Man and who he is and who his supporting characters are in really interesting ways. And I think that, like, while the fan service and the sales pitch of married Spider-Man is getting people in through the door, I think what's keeping people in this series is the fact that it's well-written, it's doing interesting things, it's taking bold swings, but in a way that's still fairly accessible. Like, I can't gush about this series enough. It's great. I love it. I want more of it.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, I think the only like, possible, like hold up with this one is just that sense of, like, you know, how long can Hickman and Chiquetto stay on it, right? Is it 18 issues and then you pass on? I mean, but even then, I'm like, just enjoy whatever run you get, you know?
I mean,
enjoy the 12 to 18.
We're already seeing things like David Messina stepping in for this issue.
For sure.
And while I think he did a really good job, I really like the artwork in issue 4. There are going to be people, especially when this is collected as a trade, who are kind of taken out by the fact that midway through the story, it switches to a different penciler.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't shock me if this is a thing that happens in and out of the series, where maybe Chichetto steps away for an issue or two, someone else comes in, and then he comes back. And so like I said, I kind of am working under the assumption that all of these books will at least run for 18 issues, and then maybe we'll see where we're at then.
I think that's ideal.
So I think at least until that point, Hickman and Chichetto are committed to this series.
If we get that, and I'll be pretty happy, honestly.
Yeah. And then at that point, either that's a case where it's passed on to new creative teams, maybe the universe changes in a different way, or maybe the universe just ends and we go back to normal and we see what Peter's up to and MJ's a superhero and Paul's knocking about. And we just keep doing
Paul,
that.
Paul is coming. You know, you said one thing that I really liked earlier, which is, I hadn't really thought about it in these terms, but, like, it's very interesting to see Harry and Pete, like, their friendship starts because they're going at it, you know, as Green Goblin and Spider-Man, and Harry's just very quickly is like, oh, you're using my tech, basically, right? And it's just, then they just kind of have a conversation, which is a very Invincible approach to everything. Like, Invincible, like, every fight just ends then, because they're like, wait, we should talk, you know?
And I remember when issue 3 came out, being a little bit confused because obviously it was a Stark suit. And then Gwen making the comment in this issue that Oscorp bought out Stane Stark.
Yes.
But, yes, it makes more sense. I see the connections here.
Yeah, but I really like the positioning here of Harry is like, I am using my vigilantism for things to save the world, in my view, right? Whereas Peter, like, he gets these powers and the first thing he's like, I guess I could stop, like, a bank robber, right? But which is classic Spider-Man stuff. But when you stack it in opposition to Harry being like, I am going to bomb the sources of misinformation. Like, there's such different
also,
objectives.
I will say, the most Jonathan Hickman thing a character could do.
Yes. Yeah, other Super
than
Nightly
set
News.
Up a newspaper, yeah. Which is also going on in this book.
Totally.
But as well with that, like, I was talking with my friend Evan on Twitter about this earlier today, that if anything, Harry is the character in this book that has the more traditional superhero origin story.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, Norman and Harry's mother are killed innocently. We don't know much about them, so, like, we don't know if Norman was a bad dude. By all accounts, Ben was friends with him, so he was clearly, like, had the public perception of a good guy.
Yeah.
I just from the way that this Harry seems fairly well-adjusted, I don't think Norman was, like, a complete psycho or a big devil monster man.
Which is hard to even fathom.
Oh, I'm still struggling right? to grapple with it now, but, like, yeah. It seems that, like, Harry had a good relationship with his parents, and then when they were, like, brutally killed in a terrorist attack, that is kind of incited a kind of... He's almost got, like, this kind of Batman origin story where he becomes the Goblin as this kind of, like, source of revenge, but not only against kind of, like, the world that took his family away from him, but specifically against the Cabal and the people that are secretly running the Ultimate Universe.
Right.
Like, Harry's motivation, and we get a little bit of in issue 4, where Peter's is just kind of like, I got powers. I guess I'll just go and swing about. And if I see a bad guy, I'll stop him. Like, there's no, like, philosophy or worldview or motivation to it. Whereas Harry very clearly has a kind of, there's a politics and there's a philosophy to his actions and what he's doing. There's a reason why he's targeting Wilson Fisk.
And he's from that world, right?
He's
from
that
world. You know,
it wouldn't shock me if the Osbournes knew something about what was going on in the same way that Wilson Fisk knows what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So, like, he probably and again, something I'm really curious to see is, like, the relationship when those characters come back. What relationship will someone like Harry Osborn and Tony Stark have?
Mm-hmm. Because they're very similar.
Those characters have a lot in common in this universe. In a way, a lot more in common than Peter has with them. So okay. I'm really curious to see what Harry's role is going to be in this.
So here's the question that leads into, which is something that a bunch of people were asking, and I think it's one of the bigger theories. There is a sense with this book, and I don't know if it's just Hickman's reputation. I don't know if it's actually there, like in the tone and in the visuals. There's a sense that like something bad is coming, right? This is Spider-Man's lot in life, right? The Parker luck. A shoe's going to drop. And I think what I'm wondering is, with one of the most interesting things to me that Hickman and Chiquetto could do would like not have Harry take the gone too far anti-hero turn and act and just kind of actually have him be like someone you have to debate whether or not you root for them. You know what I mean?
I've been thinking about this a lot, and because the thing that like whenever I tweet about this book, whenever I talk about this book in videos, the one thing that people keep bringing up is who's going to die.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like, are they going to kill MJ? Are they going to kill Uncle Ben? Are they going to kill JJ? And, like, I wasn't really expecting... I thought the twist would maybe be that no one dies.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got a... Okay. And I know this just completely, like, goes against what I just said. When I saw Harry give the speech at the end of issue 4, and especially once we get this idea that Peter is kind of looking up to Harry as a superhero that knows what he's doing and has a mission statement.
Yeah.
I think Harry might be the one to die.
Yeah.
Because it feels like whoever says the line with great power, great responsibility is normally the one that then is sacrificed.
Yeah. I mean, because I do question
that, like, and I think this idea that like Harry is maybe the one of the two of them that's more capable as a superhero, that he's the one that kind of loses his life and then Peter has to carry on the mantle. And that's not, and then that's what kind of gives him the motivation to be like, no, I'm going to go after the Kingpin, and I'm going to go after Captain Britain, and I'm going to go after the Illuminati, and I'm going to fight alongside Tony Stark to put this world back right.
That would bring him into the ultimate sphere, I think.
Exactly.
Right?
That's if kind of like his radicalization moment, where he goes from just being like a superhero because it's fun to being a superhero because we need to save this world for the better.
Yeah, that does kind of seem like the best way to keep Harry from the descent, right? To keep him from the expected Green Goblin
and
of it all.
As well, like, I think there's an interesting thing you can do there where it's like Harry then has this kind of like idealized, idyllic memory as like this source of like innocence and hope for the universe, almost in the same way that someone like Gwen Stacy does in 616, where like this is a symbol of what we could have and what we're fighting for that's been taken away in our reality. And so I think Harry can almost serve like an Uncle Ben slash a Gwen Stacy purpose. I think I hadn't really considered it up until yesterday when I read issue 4 and I saw that exchange at the end of the issue between them. And the more I think about it now and the more I talk about it, I genuinely think that might be the direction they go in.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see it. I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, the other argument against it is just like, well, Aunt May did die. Like the Uncle Ben death is Aunt May dies in the terror attack that Tony Stark is framed for by
the
council.
But then you have the aspects of like that happens. There's a big gulf in between that happening and him becoming Spider-Man. And the two events aren't really linked thematically. It's not like with Harry where like Norman's death in the same event seems to be the catalyst for him becoming the Goblin.
Yeah.
These things are seemingly, in Peter's mind, separate events.
That's true.
If anything, May's death is more of a catalyst for kind of Ben and Jonah's arc.
Right, we don't see a lot of Peter's emotional reaction.
Not really.
To that.
We don't have a context or a real understanding of what May was like. We haven't seen any flashbacks of her. We don't know what her relationship with Peter was like, how close they were. Because as well, obviously, in issue 1, we get the knowledge that Peter was like 15 when he was taken in by Aunt May and Uncle Ben.
Yeah. Right.
So it might not be the same situation where she's kind of like Peter's surrogate mother and the woman that raises him. They might not be anywhere near as close or have the same relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe the fact that like the book hasn't really dwelled on her to a massive extent might be an indication that she's not going to play that big a role in comparison to someone like Harry, who is someone that Peter is looking up to.
We can't rule out that this MA was not very kind.
Anything's possible.
I guess Ben had an emotional response in the first issue.
Look, probably, Ben right? seemingly has good taste in partners. Like J. Jonah Jameson, he seems cool. Stand-up guy so far.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that Aunt May was as well.
All right, we won't disparage the dead then. I'll take back my roast of unfortunately deceased Aunt May. No, but I think like big picture, I mean, what you're getting at is like there's so much to chew on. Actually, like if you're a Spider-Man fan, like at any point in your life, there's so much to chew on with Ultimate Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. It is interesting in a fandom way, I think, in all the ways that Ultimate X-Men isn't. Like Ultimate X-Men is very interesting in just the like beauty and like gorgeous ability of making comics. like just like in a formal like construction of comics way, I am fascinated by and enjoying Ultimate X-Men. Ultimate Spider-Man tickles all the parts of my brain that are stuffed with Marvel Comics facts and continuity. And just like, what if awesome creators took these in different directions and had different ideas? It's cool to see. And I really, like after reading, like issue 4 is like, I mean, what? Like 100% just like dinner conversations, you know? Like, I don't think anyone, like nobody web slings like, anywhere. It's captivating.
It's all 9-panel grid. There's no action. It's all conversation. And yet it's one of the most like exhilarating comics I'll read this month.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it reminded me very clearly. I tweeted this too, but it reminded me very clearly, like in part, like why I love Jonathan Hickman comics sometimes, but also just like he's very, very good. And here with the art by Messina and Nachiketto, of establishing the sense that like he's building something important. He's building something that you will want to stick around for. And that doesn't always come true. Right. We don't always get there, but the possibility of it is like that's generally why I read superhero comics. It's like I want to be at the ground floor when you're making this incredible, you know, skyscraper, and I want to get to the top of that story, a la Secret Wars, a la even on the creator own side, like East and West. Right. Because that to me is like those journeys are incredibly fulfilling. And I think Ultimate Spider-Man has that potential. I don't think it's going to go for more than 18 to 20 issues with this creative team. I would be astounded. People are like, oh, 100 issue run. I'm like, no way in hell is that happening again with Hickman. No, I just don't think we're in that phase.
I have no expectations that it will run that long, but I think in kind of like in a way you have to treat what Hickman's doing as like a director launching a cinematic universe, because that's kind of what this is in a way.
Yeah, right.
It's
right.
Like Hickman is like the phase one guy. His job is to get everything off the ground, get the franchise established, get the books selling, consistently improve to Marvel that this is a viable brand, you know, get up to 18 issues on all these books, do a big event, like do the like Infinity War or Avengers or whatever this is, and then pass the baton on to someone else. That's just kind of what I'm expecting. If Hickman stays on for longer, awesome. You will never hear me complain about more Jonathan Hickman in comics, ever.
Yeah, no, so I mean, more I'd be here for it.
And also more Tichetto, because like this is one of the most beautiful books. It's in my pull list.
Well, even and that's Tichetto's Daredevil. I mean, the reason Daredevil was so good
as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, but just like Daredevil was so good for such a long time, and a lot of that is, I mean, Chip Zdarsky can really hit when he's on, you know, on point. But I mean, Tichetto was amazing on that book. Like, really, really, I think accelerated it to another level. All right, you talked about kind of the cinematic universe of it all. Let's talk about the one that we think feels the most like a movie, Ultimate Black Panther. Okay, here's where it's won me over. I'll start with the good. Brian Edward Hill, Stefano Caselli. I actually really like how this is the most directly connected to the Makers Council. You know, we have the Moon Knights in play.
Yeah.
And the role of Wakanda as a whole is like that is the one region that the Maker didn't, you know, control and didn't sink his feelers into. I am enjoying that because I do like having some big picture connection through this book. You know, I think that's working. I do also love how it brought in Killmonger and Storm so quickly. Like Hill is not pulling his punches. I don't think he's moving at a very enjoyable pace. And I think to me, I always appreciate that with creators because it gives the sense that they've got more in the chamber, that they have a lot more story to tell. If they're able to move through things quickly, like through three issues, we're already to T'Challa going on, like away from Wakanda, moving with Killmonger. Clearly they have a Harry and Pete kind of relationship, like we just described almost. But in the, you know, kind of the Wakandan way of Killmonger being like, you need to do more.
Yeah.
I like the idea of them working together a lot. Like, mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, you two get along. Like, you feel it's not going to go that way because we know the way these stories often go, but I'm very curious to see. So the ending of issue 3 with the teaser of this mysterious, non-vibranium sort of source of cosmic energy, I'm like, what is this book doing? What is it actually doing? I'm enjoying it on that level. What are you enjoying about Black Panther?
Yeah. So just for a bit of context, for whatever reason, my comic shop seemed to really struggle to get Ultimate Black Panther. Issue 1 sold out immediately, and it wasn't in my pull list, so I didn't get it. And then I had to wait for the second printing. So I basically read the first two issues back to back and then have caught up with issue 3. So I kind of started to it a little bit later. So maybe the fact I read issues 1 and 2 immediately after each other might change kind of my thoughts on the pacing of the series. I really like this book. I think that Brian Hill is a terrific writer, and I think he's the perfect person to be doing this take on Black Panther. I think, like he said, it's the one that's the most tied into the big picture politics of the Ultimate Universe. Stefano Caselli is drawing the hell out of it. I think I'm the only person on the internet that really, really likes Caselli's take on the Black Panther suit with the kind of Catman style mask.
Okay, yeah.
I love it. I can't explain why. I will not justify it. I think it rules. I think that, like, the fact that from issue 1, we are thrown in the deep end of Khonshu and Ra's kind of conquest and reign over most of Africa and Wakanda's role against it and what Wakanda symbolizes. And as well, how that idea of what Wakanda represents is being challenged and subverted by Killmonger and Storm in what we get in issue 3. The fact that, like, by the end of issue 1, we're basically like Wakanda is at war with the Moon Knights. We get the moment where there's the suicide bomber on Khonshu and Ra's behalf and T'Chaka's killed. And then that pretty much sets up a what I would say is a fairly kind of straightforward hero's journey for T'Challa at this point, where he has to kind of like venture out into the world. He learns that like his worldview and his perception of reality is not, everything is not as it seems. And these two characters who seem a little bit more hardened and don't come from the same kind of privileged background to him are kind of training him and showing him the way that he should really be using his powers and his abilities in this war. Yeah. I think it's really interesting. I really like its take on Killmonger. I really like its take on Storm, though I would like to see more of her. I'm also curious to see even when this does overlap with what Peach is doing in X-Men, mm-hmm. because of obviously the relationship between Storm and Maystorm. And also just Storm being an X-Men and a mutant. The stuff that happened in issue 3, I think, is really curious because I have no idea what any of it means, where they find this ancient cave and there's all the references to like societies, lost societies that may predate Wakanda and what that represents. And then like the giant green orb that they find at the end of the issue. I have no idea what that is. I've not seen anyone provide a good explanation. So I'm very much still kind of like along for the ride with this series, but the more I'm reading, the more interested and curious I'm getting with it, which is an excellent sign.
Yeah, that was definitely the kind of mystery that I think it needed. Because mm-hmm. I do think, the part that makes me worried about it, was it being too traditional? Was it feeling too much, kind of like you said, like an Earth One sort of movie version of things? It is very slight at times. You know, I think I, on a month-to-month cadence, as somebody who reads too many comics, am enjoying Hill's confidence in letting Caselli tell the story a lot of times and of using very slight kind of poetic narration to guide things along. But I could see if you were binging this, you'd be like, wow, I just read 3 issues in 10 minutes. it's probably fairly quick. I do also think, the Wakandan politics of this all, there's a betrayer in their midst in terms of like who let Khonshu in. And, they bombed and killed T'Chaka, which to me it was frankly weird that they even kind of redid that origin point. It mm-hmm. kind of felt like, okay, we've seen this a lot. It felt a little bit like doing the Batman's parents in an alley. A Shuri or Okoye betrayal feels telegraphed maybe, but like Hill's smart, like maybe he finds a way around it.
Yeah, I feel like the book is wanting us to think it's one of those two characters. And I think that, like, this is clearly a very different take on Shuri to what we've seen either in 616 or what we've seen in the MCU.
Yeah.
Where she is kind of a little bit more hardened and kind of maybe, at least in issue 1, more radical than her brother. So I'm interested to see where that goes. I I feel like it might be too obvious that she is the traitor. And I think I'd maybe be more interested if it's not her, whether it's Okoye or not, I don't know. But I also don't know who it could be, because they're really the only other key players that in Wakanda that have really been established and spotlighted in this series. So I feel like it
and honestly,
has to be one of them.
If you make a Shuri, and it's like, well, I saw that coming, but then you push Shuri, like, working with the Moon Knights, and now she's with the Council, and there's a connection. Yeah. Now it's, like, going in ways where it's like, well, I saw that betrayal, but also, like, this is a story I haven't seen before. So there's an element.
It's like the Harry Osborn thing. Like, just because we expected this character is the person that does this thing, we don't know why. We don't know what it means. We don't know the impact it's going to have. Like, just because, say, it is Shuri or say it is Okoye, just because we saw this coming doesn't mean that what happens next is going to be predictable, because I don't think it is.
Yeah, right. No, yeah, I mean, that's a good point. That's what I'm enjoying about this whole line, I think, honestly, is like, we don't know. It's pretty clear that, like, whatever we think we know, we don't quite know where these stories are going. And we definitely don't know what they're going to look like in 10 months. You know, like, it is an experiment that hasn't been played with before. Again, we got this big Ultimates book dropping with Dennis Camp writing, who I'm very excited about that book. It's going to feel probably more like the core of the verse and the core of the Ultimate, you know, kind of invasion
of it
all.
Which in a way I think is what this kind of needs.
Yeah.
Where it's like, we've been building up all of these kind of like disparate corners of the universe. And then what Dennis Camp and Juan Fragueri are going to do seemingly is give us the narrative through line that connects everything, which is Tony and Reed in the Ultimate's journey against the Illuminati and ultimately against the Maker. That seems to be what's going to kind of steer the plot and the overarching sense of what's going on. So I think once that gets off the ground, we'll have a clearer sense of where not only each individual series is going, but where the universe in general is going.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So I think we've got three good to solid books, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty to chew on. I've been saying for a while, like, if you're a fan of Marvel, right now, to me, the Ultimate Universe is, like, that's the one you want to be looking at. Those are the comics you're going to want to be reading. It's the most interesting stuff. You've got, like, just, like their best kind of creators working on these books in a lot of ways. I'm very excited about it. I'm excited about Ultimates launching. I don't want them to go, like, let's say Ultimates does amazing. Right. Let's say it's like comes out, it's super critically acclaimed. People are buying it in bulk. I don't want them to then launch like five additional series to try to like capitalize on that. But
no. And I think that like Hickman and Moss and whoever's kind of in camp and everyone that's overseeing this has the leeway to kind of like not be forced into that.
It feels like it.
Like it feels like there is a predetermined set out plan for where this universe is going.
Yeah.
And that like even though like these books are likely selling better than Marvel internally anticipated, this isn't going to sway them, at least until kind of like that 18-month window is over, away from the direction that they want to take them in. Because ultimately, that's what happened last time with Hickman, and I think that like you've done that once, whether it's for better or for worse, is a different conversation.
Right.
You probably don't want to burn the greatest writer working in comics today twice back to back with these big runs that get taken away from him.
Well, that'd be just preposterous.
Like, would do such a thing?
that would be concerning. All right, we got some fan questions. If you're here with us live, thanks again for being here and listening in. Get in any questions. It's going to be last chance call for questions here. I'm going to go through some that were asked a little bit earlier.
Sure.
Okay, this is related. Torte asks, Spidey and Black Panther needed an approach sufficiently close to 616, given the issues they have in the main line, which is an interesting take. Who could benefit from a complete change like Ultimate X-Men? So, Owen, I'll throw this to you first. If you like, what property, what Marvel book would you like to see them announce, but then take like the Peach Momoko, like, listen, just do your thing with this franchise?
That's a good question. There's a couple of characters that are already knocking about in the Ultimate Universe that are clearly like big swings away from what we know that I'd want to see more of. Like you mentioned Hulk. Obviously, he's the ruler of his own kingdom, and we've not seen any of that yet. So I want to learn more about him, and like, I would read a Hulk miniseries. I'm obviously the Camp and Fragueri Ultimates issue one is going to introduce Ant-Man and the Wasp, which I'm very excited about. It has taken us 24 years to get a hopefully a good version of Ultimate Hank Pym. And if we do, I'm going to cherish it. The characters that Hank Pym is a character that I think has been underserved in recent years. And I think that like we've not had a really definitive take
the
on
most
him
recent
in quite a
40
while.
Years.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like in Marvel, like the last like notable thing they did with him was like the Ultron merger. And then he's kind of popped up here and there since, and then he was killed off for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And like we've not had a lot of Hank Pym. And Hank Pym is like, especially in like 60s and 70s Marvel, and even into the 80s, is a massively significant part of that universe. So I'd like to see kind of his characterization, where he goes and what him and Janet are up to. Reed Richards is a massive one. Like, this Reed Richards has no superpowers, as far as we know. The Fantastic Four are all dead, and he is Doctor Doom.
Yeah.
And that is something that, like, was established by Hickman and Hitch, and they're not really mined into, like, the minutiae of what this means.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, this Reed Richards clearly has experienced some shit. Like, his friends and his family are gone. They were killed by a man that is him, by his literally, like, dark reflection. And so, like, and he's also, like, even if he doesn't know it, like, he is stuck in this kind of, like, costume of the man that hates everything he represents.
Right.
Like, that's some crazy stuff. And, like, that's not really been dwelled on in any extreme way.
Yeah, so I think we'll see him in Ultimates, but is there a separate, you know, Doom miniseries
that
you get
out
of this?
I think you could do, like, there's enough, like, especially if you really learn more about what happened to the Fantastic Four, who they were, who Reed was before this happened. I think there's a series in and of itself there. I imagine we'll get a lot of that in Ultimates. But then again, if it's all going to be, like, self-contained one-shot stories that introduce new characters, I don't know how much time you have to dwell on establishing everything we need to know about Reed, at least without prolonging it over the 18-issue run.
Yeah, which honestly is like, again, that's why I like having a timeline, because it is like, mm-hmm. you need to, as a creator here, you need to choose what is the most essential info, right? And as opposed to like, well, we've got forever, and sometimes that can be a bad thing, right? You can pull the wrong information. The characters that I would love to see given
I have one more that I wanted to add.
Yeah.
Which is, so we've got Reed as Doom, but I also really would like an Ultimate Fantastic Four none of the original four characters. That kind of takes the premise and the idea of the Fantastic Four, but is not Reed, Sue, Ben, and Johnny.
So a new cast, right? Would you go the Peach approach of like almost like new characters, or would you do like a She-Hulk, like familiar FF?
I think maybe like a question I'm having, and I've had since I've read Invasion, because obviously like Reed is Doom, the Maker's Dome was in Latveria. Where is Victor Von Doom?
Hmm.
Because if there's anyone that should be knocking around a shadowy cabal, it's normally him.
And he wasn't, I didn't see him on the Maker's list. The Maker certainly would have accounted for a Victor.
If there's anyone that would account for Doctor Doom, it is a Reed Richards.
Yeah.
So the fact that he has not been mentioned, I think, is really interesting. Like, I would read a book where he is the person that forms a Fantastic Four.
Ooh, I like that twist. That's
where
pretty
he
good.
Is like the Reed Richards. Because then you've got this interesting comparison piece of like the Maker being a Reed Richards who is more like Doctor Doom than he is Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And potentially a Victor Von Doom who is more like Mr. Fantastic than he is Doctor Doom. So I think there's something there. I don't know who else you would flesh out that team with. But I would be quite curious to see, because like the original Ultimate Fantastic Four that Bendis and Miller did was a fairly, you know, noticeable reinvention of the classic team. But it is still, you know, Reed Richards is Elastic, Sue can fade from sight, Johnny's the Human Torch, the Thing can fight all night, or whatever the 90s song.
The Thing just loves to fight.
There you go, the Thing just loves to fight. It's been a while since I've watched that show. But like, despite the fact that they are younger, and it is like more about like interdimensional travel than it is like beating the Soviets to space.
Mm-hmm.
Once we get into the series, it's kind of the same stuff. So I'd quite like to see a Fantastic Four that take the core premise and very little else.
I love that.
And
that'd
like,
be super
if you
cool.
Give a writer that is able to like put an interesting spin on them in the same way that Momoko has with X-Men, I think that could be really cool.
Yeah, I'd be very on board with that. I do also like it. So like the Maker imprisoned Reed and put him in the Doom suit. You don't want to do that again and be like, he also imprisoned Victor. What if he just like made Victor happy? Like, what if he just like gave him a really nice life and he didn't lose his parents and he was never a tortured soul? And that was his solution for Victor Von Doom. But then obviously something will change, and now we can lead a new Fantastic Four. Like, let's invert it. Let's see what happens. I'm into it.
So that's my pitch anyway. I want an Ultimate Fantastic Four led by Victor Von Doom.
I love it. All right. The characters that are teams that I would like to see like reinvented significantly. For a while, I would have said the Eternals, but honestly, Karen Gillan and Issa Rivage did that really well. And I feel like we're too close to that. Silver Surfer. I feel like Silver Surfer has not had an especially interesting take since like Jim Starlin.
My only like hesitation with Surfer is that like I think it's too early to explore the cosmic side of the Ultimate Universe. Like we're still scratching the surface of like what the Earthbound characters are and what they're doing.
We have no idea what cosmic looks like at this point.
Exactly. Like zero. I think like the next 18 months will, I'd be shocked if we explore any kind of cosmic stuff. That seems like something you could do after the big event that comes later.
I could see that being a phase two thing.
Yeah.
I could definitely see that being a good phase two. I want to see the Runaways transformed. Mm. I think that franchise is just like, listen, BKV, Adrian Alfona, shouts to the 2000 creation. They've never really progressed beyond that. Rainbow Rawls tried recently, and like with Chris Anka especially, did some really good work. But I would just love to see somebody take the concept and be like, listen, it's been 24 years. Like it's been 24 years. Yeah. How can we reinvent? How can we make this something new? I feel like you could use that franchise and make it pretty cool. And then my third and final pick for like a transformation would be Heroes for Hire. Like, give me some Luke Cage.
I was thinking
give me some
about
Danny Rand. Classic Heroes for Hire. Like, I want to see those characters through a new lens, new perspectives. That really, I feel like Marvel's like almost totally moved away from. Like, Luke Cage is a mayor now. Like, he's in a different class. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's in a different place.
I think, yeah, I felt that like either Heroes for Hire or like some sort of Defenders, like more street level series could be really interesting. Like, obviously, we met Matt Murdock in Ultimate Spider-Man issue one, and he doesn't seem to be doing a lot of daredeviling at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot can happen. Maybe he receives a floating orb that just like blinds him in the face. He's already blind. He doesn't have superpowers.
I was going to say, Tony would that would be like definitely the rudest thing. You know, that actually raises a question. So
it's like, sorry to interrupt. It's like the whole thing where like people have been, there was a running joke about like Tony going around and like breaking Charles Xavier's legs.
Yeah, yeah.
And like shooting Frank Castle's family.
Like doing all the origins again.
I want to read.
Yeah, yeah. How does Tony, well, I guess that's, I mean, in Ultimates, we're going to find out, right? We're going to get a new character every issue. Or at least that's what's been proposed. Okay, here's my question. Tony shows up to Peter and he says, hey, it's me, Tony Stark. Here's some powers you should have had, right? And the way the story goes is Peter believes him and he takes the spider stuff and now he's Spider-Man, okay? We accept it. We move on. Why does Peter Parker trust Tony Stark, who, as far as he would know,
terrorist.
Yeah, and responsible for the death of Aunt May. Do you understand that?
Not really. Not when you mention it.
Okay.
But the thing I thought you were going to say then, what I'm interested in seeing is like, what if he goes to give it to someone else and that person either says no or takes those powers and uses it for other reasons?
Yeah.
Like what if, and I'm just picking a character off the top of my head here, like what if he goes to Stephen Strange and is like, you're going to be the Sorcerer Supreme. You're going to have the power over kind of like reality and time. And he's like, cool, I'm going to use that and be a massive dick.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
because like 20 years have passed, these characters have evolved in many different ways. Like they could be unrecognizable to how we expect them to be. And I think that we probably will throughout the Camp of Frigeri Ultimates run see some characters who maybe Tony gives those powers to and don't use them for the right reasons.
Mm-hmm. Which would be like, which would make it so much more interesting, right? To really take the idea of the character and then be like, okay, but what if they responded differently?
I want to see like them show up to like Ultimate Wolverine's house and just try and stick a metal skeleton inside him.
Yeah. And he's like, I want nothing to do with this. Right. He's like, this is a weird thing to do to somebody. Please stop. Yeah. No, that'd be pretty good as well. All right. Let's see. What other questions we got here? Folks are getting questions in the chat. Thanks y'all for dropping those in. No, we're not going to do that one. Some good questions here. Rainstorm asks, do you think there's room in a tight line like Ultimate to have character drama stories like Fraction and Aha, Hawkeye, Raoul She-Hulk, Angela Queen of Hell, titles that do great character work? Just thinking of frame. I honestly, I feel like that's what a lot of the Ultimate, like that's what Ultimate X-Men and Ultimate Spider-Man kind of are, yeah. I would say at this point, right? They aren't big superhero action, big plot beats, you know, at least at this stage.
Yeah, I definitely think that like the strength of a lot of these books so far is that they are character led. Obviously, we'll see where things go as kind of the world building and the plot stuff seems to be ramping up over the next few months. But I think that like that should be a thing that Hickman and Moss and everyone involved kind of maintains going forward, is that like these books aren't just about plot and narrative. It's about, and also like world building, but it's also just about telling interesting stories about characters that clearly mean something to their creators. Like Ultimate Spider-Man is clearly very autobiographical for Jonathan Hickman. Ultimate X-Men is clearly pulling from a lot of Peter Momoko's own history and background. And that's something I would like to see continue, is that like these stories, in addition to being great superhero stories, have that kind of meta commentary and have something to say about the industry and the people telling them.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Do you think this imprint works, this is a question from Kurt, as an answer to DC Black Label, or would it need to have more experimentation with format, issue length, etc.? I don't think it's a direct competitor, you know? It's just not the same thing.
I think that the issue with Black Label is, I feel like I still don't fully understand what Black Label is.
I don't think it does either.
No, and I think that like Black Label's put out a lot of good books. Like some of my favorite DC stuff for the last couple of years have been Black Label books. I think it serves a good role, but like it's not clearly defined. Like it's not the Elseworlds label, it's not the All-Star label, it's not the Earth One label, it's just its own. It's essentially just like a censorship rating at this point. It's just here.
Almost.
It's more of like a Marvel Max or like a Marvel Knights thing than it is like an Ultimates thing. And which is fine. Like I think it's good. But like the fact that we're getting like all the rumors and the stuff about the Absolute DC line, which seems like more of an Ultimates DC stuff, says that like, and I think Marvel should be doing more like original graphic novels and more prestige formats and doing more kind of stuff in addition to regular ongoing stuff, like what DC are doing with Black Label. But I don't think that the Ultimate books is where those things are going to come in necessarily.
Yeah, and I'm the prestige line, like a Black Label to me is always the most appealing as an actual collector of physical comics too. Like I love going to the comic shop and getting the oversized, you know, Daniel Warren Johnson, Wonder Woman, Dead Earth, or whatever it is. Marvel just doesn't have an answer for that at all. So I like the idea of them carving out space for trying for, and kind of what Black Label is trying to do is just be like, these are the good comics for like serious readers. And it just, that doesn't always work. Like that's a really hard thing to bake in. You know, it's essentially Vertigo, but with DC characters, but that doesn't make it good, right? But what they are doing is like they are letting creators just like, they're like, Christian Ward, you want to do Batman, City of Madness? Like go wild. And then Christian Ward's great. And like, that's one of the most interesting looking comics you're going to find.
I think Marvel should be doing some sort of, whether it's like a direct response to Black Label or just kind of like mixing up how they publish their stories in general. That is something they should be doing. And maybe some stuff in the Ultimate books could cross over into that initiative. Like say we get some limited series or we get some like particular ongoings that are quite different to normal stuff could also be published through this secondary imprint. But I don't think the Ultimate Universe itself and Black Label have a lot in common necessarily.
No. Are you in favor of the rumored Absolute DC and them doing an Ultimate line a la headed by Scott Snyder, which is the rumor de jour?
We'll see what happens. I don't know how much I can and want to say about it at this moment. I'm very much in my kind of like let it play out era.
Yeah.
We've been getting a lot of rumors for a while, and the Bleeding Cool article that came out, was it last week? It certainly wasn't the first time I'd heard this stuff.
It makes sense. I mean, in theory,
I'm curious to see where it goes. And like, I'll reserve judgment until I get specifics on here's what this imprint is going to be. Here are the titles. Here's the creative teams. Then maybe I'll form an opinion. But right now, a lot of it is kind of rumor and speculation. And I think the idea is cool. I think that, like, obviously a lot of people's minds flash back to the Earth One books DC did. And the issue with those wasn't, in most cases, the quality of the books. It was the fact that they were taking, like, 3 to 5 years for a volume to come out.
Right.
I think that imprint gave us a lot of great comics. Green Lantern Earth One is a absolutely tremendous and one of the most slept on books of the last decade.
Yeah.
I think that what Johns did in Batman Earth One has a lot of interesting ideas. What Morrison was doing in Wonder Woman Earth One is kind of interesting and fascinating.
Hearing Morrison talk about that book is very interesting.
Oh, absolutely.
I really like Morrison's writings
Morrison
about Wonder Woman.
Writing about it in the Substack is maybe more interesting than reading the books themselves, to be honest.
I kind of think so, yeah.
But like the issue with those series wasn't the quality of the stories themselves for most of them, at least in the early volumes. They were very good. It was hard to invest in a universe that you like, okay, Batman Earth One, Volume One I really like this. I can't wait for Volume Two. Oh, I've got to wait 4 years.
It was so spread out, yeah.
Yeah, that's what killed that brand more than the actual what they were doing. I think if they can do that in a more regular schedule in single issue forms as an ongoing, I think that could work. And I think that like what Hickman and Marvel have done with the new Ultimate books is a testament that this can still work in a modern context.
Yeah. Well, and so much of it too, like it does. It just comes down to, are the right people in place? And, you know, do you have editor and backing essentially to like support their own visions?
This is, I'll say this much. This has clearly been something that if it gets announced this month, next month at Comic Con or whatever, isn't something that has sprang out of nowhere. This is clearly something that DC have been working on for some time. If Snyder's the person shepherding this, it's something that he's been working on for quite a while. So I don't think it's going to be like a rush job in the same way that other like DC reboots have been.
No.
I'm curious to see where it goes.
Yeah. Like these two love to copy what the other is doing. You know, like Marvel and DC have a very long history of that. Sure. But they, you know, DC's had, like, it's not like they haven't had 25 plus years to be like, how could we do an Ultimate Universe? It's not a new idea.
If Scott Snyder and whatever editors and other writers are going to be working on this series have had at least the last 18 months to plot out, okay, here's what we're going to do. Here are the titles. Here's what we're going to do. Here's where it's all leading to. And like the same way that Hickman and Moss and the Ultimate team clearly have a 2-year plan.
Yeah.
If they can have that, then it'll work. As long as the books are good, which I would assume they will be, because I imagine they're going to get a lot of good creators on them.
It does seem like we'll see. You're right. It's all rumor at this point. I think probably something is going to come of it, whether or not it's actually an Ultimate DC line. Like, we'll have to actually wait for some sort of credible announcement.
I think they should bring back the Stan Lee Just Imagine DC universe.
as is, or just like the idea, I guess.
No, that's DC's Ultimate Universe.
Yeah, yeah. So they take those ideas.
I'll write a book.
So Stan Lee and Dave Gibbons create Green Lantern, right? I think is one of them. And we're just going to do that, but we're going to attach new creators to it. And like just so then too, not only if you're DC, not only are you taking the Ultimate Universe idea, but you're taking Stan Lee with you.
Exactly. Take that, Marvel.
There you go. That's
we took Jack Kirby in the 70s, and now we're taking Stan Lee.
Now we got Stan posthumously.
Oh, imagine if he did. This would have been the biggest middle finger that Lee could have done if he did like a Just Imagine New Gods.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That would have caused like a singularity event.
I feel like even Stan had the sense to be like, I'm not putting my foot in those waters. I realize how that would look. Maybe. Who knows? All right. So, final question here. You've been going for a long time. Thanks for your time today. When the Maker comes out in 2 years, what do you think, like, what is the threat of that to you? Or like, why does that feel like a moment that has weight, you know, as far as you understand it at this point?
There's a couple of things I'm really intrigued by with that. And I think that like right now, I think the Maker works best as this looming threat where we don't know what to expect. And part of that is like, so the dome that he's in, does that function like the City of Tomorrow?
Yeah, right.
Where
he's working.
Like where time accelerates. Mm. Where like in Hickman's original Ultimates run with Assad Ribic, the idea was that after Reed, you know, goes and hangs out with aliens and breaks up the Fantastic Four, builds the dome and essentially lives in it for like thousands and millions of years. Like, are we gonna get that? Is he just gonna is he cryogenically frozen? Will he have had time to like prepare an army? Like, what's Kang doing? Like, there's a lot of variables and a lot of things we don't know. So I'm quite curious to see that. I think that like the idea is that once he's gonna come out, it will essentially be like a battle for the fate of the universe. Because then you've got this idea of like, Earth 1610 as the maker designed it versus Earth 1610 as like the heroes have redesigned it, which I think is cool and interesting. But what in terms like what that's going to entail in a tangible sense, I'm not really sure.
Right.
And I think for right now, until like we know more.
Which is deliberate.
Better as this kind of, but for right now, I think it works better as this kind of like vague and looming threat. And the fact that we don't know what to expect, like the dome could open and the maker could be dead. He could have, there could have been no oxygen in the dome and he could have just suffocated 2 years ago.
We're worried about nothing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Like, yeah, but legitimately, or he could come out and he could have like an army of millions with nukes and mortis engines ready to go.
Yeah. Or what if just like, Kane comes out, no right? Idea. What if it's not even him?
Yeah.
It is possible.
Like the fact that we have no idea, and I kind of hope that Camp and Fugere in their Ultimates one don't show us anything about that. Obviously, it's going to be mentioned and referenced.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we're going to learn a little bit more about the Maker's plans and the history of what he did. But I don't want to see anything from the dome until it opens.
I think I'm with you on that. Yeah, no scenes from inside the dome. It's just that looming threat. It's just a darkness that we don't understand. I mean, the cool thing about the Maker in this verse too, right, in Ultimate Invasion is like, he is in control, right? Like he has everyone under his thumb. We don't fully understand exactly what that means, right? But like, there's a very clear sense that like, the Maker has tech or genetic engineering, or like basically his fingerprints in everyone. And if he, you know, because it's not just going to be like, oh, he's so tough, he can stretch, right? Like that's never been, it's not just like, yeah. Oh, we have to fight him now. It's not that kind of story. But it is like, no, he's going to be able to reclaim this earth for himself, you know?
Well, the scariest thing to me with this is like, so say that that time is passing in the dome and that they're not just kind of like frozen still. Even without the idea of maybe time accelerating a different rate, the Maker will have 2 years to plan and prepare. And planning and preparing is what the Maker does better than anyone.
Yeah.
And so if he has whatever resources he has in the dome, if he has 2 years to put a plan in place, that's scary.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's why it's going to be good. I'm excited about
Never
it.
Never mind
so, all
if
right.
he has like hundreds and thousands of years. If time passes, if there's like time dilation in there.
I feel like you can't do that because then it would be completely impossible to believe that he wouldn't just come out and demolish everyone, you know?
True.
Like it'd be very hard to sell that. All right, Owen, this has been fun. It feels like we're both pretty high on the Ultimate Universe right now. I don't know that there's a lot it could do that like I wouldn't. The only thing it could do that I would be like check out on before time was up would be if like suddenly they start caving to like the pressures of like, well, Ultimate X-Men isn't selling and they like boot Momoko or something, right? Like if all of a sudden after all this like sense of, oh, the creators are actually like kind of have some more control here. If we start to lose that, that would probably make me the most unhappy with the progress. Are there any creators that you would love to see getting at bat in the Ultimate Universe that you feel like would just be perfect for this kind of setup?
That's a good question. In terms of the first point of what you were saying, I agree. I think that like so far, everything is going pretty well. The books are selling. General response from fans and critics is positive. Obviously, there's a lot of let it play out because it's still very early on. But so far, everything's going well. And there's no reason to kind of course correct from whatever Moss and Hickman and co have planned. So it's very much the case of like, I'm enjoying the ride and I'm willing to see where this goes over the next year or two. In terms of like creators I'd like to see involved, there's a long list. I think that like Al Ewing could do something really interesting and cool if you give him a corner of this universe. I think that Ryan North is one of Marvel's best writers right now. He's doing a horrifically underrated Fantastic Four run that might be top three all time, in my opinion. Like, give him a book, give him something and see what he can do. There's so many great creators right now, and because the universe is still in flux and it's being built in an interesting way, that creators with a unique style and vision can come in and kind of like take their own corner of it and do something really cool in the same way that like Brian Hill and Peter Momoko have, and that Dennis Camp and Owen Fregeri are likely going to do in June.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right. Awesome. This is good. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's been fun. Again, like Ultimate Spider-Man for me this week was a nice reminder that like, oh yeah, like when this when this is on, like, it's kind of the Marvel comic I'm most looking forward to reading right now. Like, just on it, like, I think too, because we're in that kind of early setup phase, it's like, I don't really want to miss a week of any of the Ultimate books, because I'm like, I kind of want to see where everything is driving, and see how exciting, you know, it could potentially be, which is a nice Agreed. Place to be. Yeah,
just agreed. Nice like, there's four books right now at Marvel that I am like insisting I am going first thing in the day as soon as my comic shop opens and getting, and they are the three Ultimate books, soon to be four, and Ryan North's Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
I am very close to adding Immortal Thor onto that list. I had not been keeping up with it, but I read the Rocks on Thor one shot, and I think it might be my favorite comic of the year. So I'm desperately going to have to catch up, because whatever Ewing is cooking with Chad Hammer is something I need more of in my life.
Chad Hammer is incredible.
Shout out to Chad Hammer.
Immortal Thor has been very interesting. I'll be curious to hear your
thoughts. I interviewed Al Ewing late last year, and we talked a little bit about what drew him to kind of come back to the world of Thor after doing his big Loki run.
Yeah.
And it made me really excited to go and check the series out, and it just kind of passed me by. And now I've kind of got a taste of like, okay, Al's cooking here.
Right.
I've really got to go back and catch up and just see what's going on.
Yeah. No, there's some big, interesting ideas for sure. Awesome. Well, Owen, where should people find you, and what do you got cooking? What do you want to plug?
Oh, so firstly, I just want to say thank you for finally kind of succumbing to my bullying and harassment and letting me on Comic Book Owl Live. This is proof that mob mentality works, ladies and gentlemen. So do take that. That should be the one takeaway from this podcast, that mob mentality and just not taking no for an answer does work eventually.
I was happy to have you on.
I always enjoy chatting with you, Dave. It's always a pleasure. This show is always in my weekly rotation, and I said this on Twitter last week, and it bears repeating. You are someone that makes me a smarter and a more knowledgeable and nuanced comic fan, and I genuinely, sincerely appreciate the work you do.
No, thank you.
In regards to where you can find me, if you've enjoyed listening to me ramble about the Ultimate Marvel Universe and you enjoyed it, you are in luck. If you head on over to my YouTube channel, Owen Likes Comics, I have covered a lot of Ultimate books, new and old, in my time, in addition to a lot of non-Ultimate books. The next video I'll be dropping will be sometime next week, and it is a deep dive into Robin and Batman by Jeff Lemire and Justin Wen, talking about the legacy of Dick Grayson and his role within the Batman mythos. It's a really fun video. I've been working on it for a while, pretty much since like October time last year when I interviewed Jeff for the video. So it's a big project I've been working on. Dick Grayson is one of my favorite characters in comics, and I think this video is a nice tribute to him and what he symbolizes and represents. And so if that sounds like something you'd enjoy, that'll be coming out late next week. The latest video that's currently out on the channel is about and thinking about, with the books that are coming out right now and how everything seems to be going so well, what lessons can be learned from previous endeavors that maybe didn't work out so well. You can find me on most social media forms, Twitter, Instagram. I'm on TikTok now because that's seemingly where the kids are. All just at Owen Likes Comics.
My goal is to start TikTok as soon as it gets finally shut down here in the States,
I feel like Joe Biden found out I was doing videos explaining Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol and was like, we can't let the American people hear about this.
Yeah, Biden is famously anti-Morrison. It's one of many...
election, but do keep it in mind.
But yeah, but taking you off of TikTok is not necessarily the best election year move. I'll just leave it at that. Well, Owen, this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining. This was a blast. To all of you in the chat, probably I will be here next week, and we will definitely catch up on what's been going on in X-Men. We'll catch up on what's going on in Free Comic Book Day, including the first teaser here for Ultimates and Blood Hunt and these sorts of things. I will also be at C2E2 this weekend. I'm going to be at the con Friday through Sunday. I'm going to be working for Popverse, covering stuff. I'm going to be interviewing creators like Chip Zdarsky and Brian Azzarello. And nice. If you're going, maybe we could say hi. I might be here wearing this very hat. So swing by if you like, and say hi. I'll be at C2E2 downtown in Chicago. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Owen, thanks so much for being here. And as always, enjoy the comics.